Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Spec Talk Radio. This is your host, Karen Ranz, President of Launch Funding Network and the Managing Director of the Network of Business Angels and Investors. Spec Talk Radio is the premier radio show for the private equity and entrepreneur community to come together to learn about how to create wealth, grow companies, and succeed from startup to exit. And we have an exciting segment today with our special guest, Jessica Ma. Jessica is a young entrepreneur to watch. She is really going places. Jessica started her first internet company at the age of 13. She finished high school at the age of 15 and is now studying computer science at UC Berkeley. Through speaking engagements and side projects, she has been teaching young people how to get a jump start on entrepreneurship and their future careers. Welcome, Jessica.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for being on the show. I wanted to dig into a little bit about your background and why this is such an interesting show that we're going to have today. And I've noticed on your blog, on your bio, that you're actually gone out on the limb and proclaimed yourself as a lifelong geek. So I guess geeks are cool these days, right?
Yeah, I mean, all my friends are geeks. We're all geeks.
Yeah, absolutely. So I noticed that you found great pleasure in leveraging your entrepreneurial experience and programming expertise toward helping other young people. And this past year, you had the opportunity to be featured on the PBS Biz Kids to teach young people how to bootstrap their first entrepreneurial project. And you're collaborating with an author, Cal Newport, on a book aimed at helping teenagers explore their passions outside of the classroom. This is just exciting, everything that you've got going on. How did you get started doing this? How did you become an entrepreneur at such a young age?
So one thing leads to another. When I was young, I thought, all right, let me find some cool ways to make money, and I think I started my interest in second grade. On the last day of school, my teacher made us all put up an imaginary business, and we'd sell stuff for imaginary money, and right then and there, I realized, wow, this is a lot of fun.
education through the school system, not your parents entrepreneurs, or you had entrepreneurs in your family?
My mom is an entrepreneur, but she didn't, forcefully push that on me, so I think the school system really promoted that for me. I've had a lot of luck, I've had a lot of people encouraging me through this, not just my parents.
Okay, terrific. So now you write about entrepreneurship and education on your blog, and that's actually how we came to know each other, is through the posting that you did on your blog. I guess somebody had Twittered it to me, and I went to it and just, thought it was right on. And that blog, your blog is jessicamah.com, jessicamah.com, if anybody wants to go and look at that. But the title of that initial blog was Why 99% of Entrepreneurs Fail Because They Don't Do Anything. Right? And that's really why we're having this conversation today, is to really sort of explore that, because I work with entrepreneurs on a daily basis, and that's why so much of what you said hit home. Not only do I see that in companies, but I've also seen that in myself as I've started to kind of create my own businesses over the years and going through those different phases. So how did you come to realize, is it just sort of the school of hard knocks that you figured it out, or did you have some mentor that sort of helped you navigate the difference between a professional entrepreneur and an amateur entrepreneur?
So since I started my blog, I thought, Well, I first thought that I was a legit entrepreneur, and then some people started to tell me, hey, you're thinking of a lot of these great ideas, but you're not following through with even half of them. So I'm like, crap, then maybe, if I'm honest with myself, maybe I'm not a real entrepreneur. And then over time, I started getting emails from people who have these great ideas for companies, but they have no clue where to start on implementing it. And then I came to realize, you know, this is a pattern I keep on seeing. Most of the self-proclaimed entrepreneurs I talk to aren't actually all that entrepreneurial if you actually think about it. And so out of personal experience, I decided to put together that blog post.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's what we're gonna dig into that a little bit and have some good, healthy conversation about the three that you started with and sort of I added to it. And then I went out to LinkedIn and posed it as a question and got a lot of other feedback. I've thought about all the different feedback and some conversations I've had of late in preparation for this particular segment. And hopefully we'll narrow it down to 10, but we're gonna open it up to calls a little bit later in the show and have people call in, and we may end up having a list of like 100 of things that entrepreneurs do to show that they're amateurs. But so anybody that's listening now, Jessica and I are going to sort of start talking about this, and then we'll open up the phone lines. You can call in on 347-945-6873. So before we get started on that list, one of the things I think I saw you put out there on Twitter, and I was just, you know, again, to me, being somebody that's, I'll confess, I'm probably twice your age. Okay? And when I was young like you, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. That was always, you know, my dad was an entrepreneur, and so I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And, but, you know, I've sort of done it by, you know, figuring it out the hard way. You know, what this didn't work, oh, let's try this, right? And so, you know, having you have the insight and the wisdom that you had at your age is just really impressive to me. And then you sent over, a Twitter post that Inc. Magazine has named you, listed you in there as, what was the actual thing? It was
one of the coolest college startups, yeah.
Can you talk about that and how you got on that list and what you're involved in now?
Yeah, so like I said before, one thing leads to another, and I got pretty lucky. I met a few people at TechCrunch, became pretty good friends with the few of them, and I wanted an internship in to get some press. So they're like, all right, cool, I'll put an internship in on TechCrunch. So I got on TechCrunch. And from there on, I just got so many different opportunities for so many different things. And getting into Inc. Magazine was just one of those things. So just one day out of the blue, Inc. sent me an email asking if they could write an article on us. And I'm like, all right, sure. And now we're on Inc.com. And then from that, I'm sure I'll get opportunities. It's just this endless spiral of incredible opportunity.
So, yep. So that's great. It is, you know, it's great that you not only have the ability, the insight to see opportunities and pursue those, but then also understand the thin threads of good connections. And this is going to be part of what we talk about in our top list, top 10 things, if we can get it to 10, is, you know, recognizing, building teams, reaching out to folks that have the expertise and the access, and that's part of, you know, success in entrepreneurism really is a collaborative effort.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. So, well, let's get into the ones that you started with on your top three. And I think, you know, one of the things I made a correction when I went back to my blog is entrepreneurblogspace.com. And when I went back to that, I said, you know, the 99% of the businesses fail if they don't figure out how to become non-amateur. I don't know what the right term for that is, but right? It's like, you know, businesses succeed, but it's because they figure out how to move beyond being an amateur to being a professional or being successful, figuring that out. That's part of the – and one of the good news is that a lot of the programs, and I'm sure Berkeley has one as well, they have these great entrepreneur programs in the universities for folks like me that, you know, decades ago they didn't have – you know, we went to MBA school, but MBA school sure didn't teach you how to be an entrepreneur. And so it's a great thing that these schools have it. I think it's going to be exciting for America's future because, you know, so many folks hopefully are coming out of formal education knowing a little bit more about how not to be amateurs, but they get to that. Hopefully, knock on wood. So
yeah.
Your first one for type one of an amateur entrepreneur is all ideas and no implementation. So
yep.
What do you mean by that?
So these people, I think, are the most common of the three. They say, I have this brilliant idea. I'm going to incorporate it. I'm going to patent it. And I'm going to find lots of cheap programmers from India to actually go for it and implement it. And it's sort of frustrating to see, but in a way, it's also humbling because I remember I was once in that position where I had lots of great ideas for companies, but I didn't know how to actually follow through and implement on them. It's a problem of not knowing what you don't know. These entrepreneurs, or so-called entrepreneurs, are business and marketing people, which is great, but they don't have co-founders. They don't have a team of people who are actually capable of following through.
Right. Yep. And that leads into some of the things I've put on my list that we'll go through. So your second one, and I'm going to not say exactly what you said here so we don't I don't get bleeped by the FCC here, but lots of ideas and half-baked implementation. So it kind of leads on to what you said with no implementation, but what's the danger of a half-baked implementation?
Well, so like one example, I had a very good friend who had this really cool idea for, like, this new revolutionary dating site. And I hate ideas for dating sites, but this one was actually really cool. And he was working on it full-time for 5 months. And it was coming along great, but it wasn't perfect. And if it wasn't perfect, he wasn't going to launch it to the public. And he was just going to leave it there, half-implemented, this great idea that has great potential, and he just didn't follow through.
Right. Okay. Hey, Jessica, I'm getting some feedback. Are you on a speakerphone?
No, I'm in my college dormitory.
So they just naturally echoes that way, huh?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm sorry.
Okay, no problem. It's just I have folks that listen in to make sure things go well, and so they were just giving me some of that. But we'll work with what we got. So, okay, so on, you know, that, and that's one of the challenges, I guess, when people are they want to be perfectionists, they don't want to do things wrong and fail, and then they fail by sort of deselecting themselves out of the process instead of, because half of you know, so many companies have succeeded because they got started, and very quickly, and particularly the internet is really easy to adjust, and well, even like Facebook. Facebook is a great example of that. You know, when it got first started in a dorm room, it was nothing like what it is now.
Yeah, I know.
When I was, I've got a new project that we're going to be launching, knock on wood, this year called Our Funding Planet. And I've struggled with that myself because I want it to be perfect. You know, I chose the perfect technology. I chose the perfect this, perfect that before I launch. And then I was out looking, doing some research on, and that's part of, you know, one side of my brain. The other side of my brain is like, just do it, right? And I was out on LinkedIn looking for key resources to find people that could be part of my, you know, that are smarter about this stuff than I am, to be on. And I found a presentation from a guy that was, I guess, former technology person over at LinkedIn about how they re-engineered LinkedIn. And I thought, so LinkedIn, even, you know, it got started, realized they needed to make some changes, and they re-engineered. So really, particularly in the software space and in any kind of web environment, it's best to get started, but be aware of the trends, be aware of your technology, be attuned to the business so that you can adjust it and modify it and correct the course in a timely manner to make it all that it can be according to the response in the marketplace. And then one of the best things is to let the marketplace respond to you and give you that feedback on how it needs to change. And your friend, he'll never know if it would have been or not, you know? And he doesn't ever let the marketplace give him feedback.
Yeah, that's too bad. I mean, he has two choices. Like, he could launch it, just throw it out there, like, half done, get some early feedback, or he could, like, he chose not to launch it at all just because he's scared of what the feedback will be. So I guess that's just a psychological barrier that he needs to get over.
And that's why we know one really big software company that is notorious for launching beta type stuff, things that aren't quite done. And then, you know, let the marketplace uncover all the bugs and, you know, give them the feedback on it, right? So they've made lots of money, cornered a big chunk of the marketplace with that whole model, and it's worked very well for them. So,
yeah.
Okay, so number three, lots of ideas, lots of implementation, and absolutely no focus.
Yeah. So this one is where a lot of even successful entrepreneurs fall into. It's a trap because you have one great idea, and then it's like, oh, I have another great idea. Let me work on those two together so I can mitigate my personal risk. Or maybe it's just one person has an interest in so many different projects at the same time, and you just want to do everything at the same time. And it's problematic because you're splitting your time up among two different things. So, like I wrote on my blog post, my mom is one of those people who was stuck in this trap because she has one company that helps her make her money, and then she started another company that would hopefully make her even more money. But in the meanwhile, she had to work on her other company to keep the cash flow in, and then there you are, stuck with two companies that both need lots of time into them, and you're not focused on either one. And,
yeah. This is probably the one I related to the most to, because I've sort of fell into some of these businesses, and I've got running the angel investor group and running the consulting services group and trying to make them be part of an integrated model, and that's really what we're working on executing now. But it's been, you know, 3 years ago, I was definitely in that same boat, and I'm trying to dig myself out of that same trap that you just described, because it is one of those things that you really can, and so we fight it within our organization because of all that we do. We get new opportunities all the time, and I'm always having to tell my team, no, we're not doing that. It's not part of the course of the direction that we're going. We're not going to go take resources and do something half-baked, because it's a great idea, and we think it might accomplish something, but it's going to take resources away from our ultimate goal and the direction that we're setting with our integrated model. So, you know, good idea, we'll do it some other day, you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
And so, okay, well, let's get into some of the other ones that sort of came in as I was pulling this whole thing together on my list here. Okay. The one that I see a lot of, which I had put down as my number four, because I see a lot of this coming in. And when I first left IBM to go work for one of my customers to take him to market and get him some money, it was exactly this problem, okay? So it's lots of ideas, but doesn't know what he doesn't know. And so how I describe that is, you know, somebody, they don't know that they don't have the expertise in a certain area, or they don't know that they need to, maybe it's in the way that they raise capital, or the way that they don't know what their competition's really like. They don't know what their customer really wants. And so, but instead of, it's one thing to not know it and go out and find the answer to it, but when you're stuck in, you don't know what you don't know, and you don't want to know what the answer is. Right? Have you ever encountered that?
Yeah, I mean, I had that I remember 2 years ago. Had some ideas for internet companies I wanted to work on. I put my all into figuring out how to implement these websites. I didn't know how to program them myself, so I tried to outsource them. And so I spent dozens of hours interviewing offshore programmers to help me implement this. And it was just really difficult because there's so much that I didn't know, and I don't know what I don't know. So I fell into that category that you just listed.
Yeah. But you figured it out, and that's all part of where we're going with this, is that the companies that succeed, the CEOs that succeed, they figure those things out, and then they're smarter the next time around as they go about it.
Yeah, definitely.
So number five was innovation with no practical knowledge of the market to build, and so they do what I call build it and they will come. They're going to build something. They've got an innovation, and that's it. They're just, you know, and they have no idea how they're going to actually take it to market or why somebody wants it. We saw a company like this, and it was a great piece of technology. They finally figured it out. And at the time when they first came to us, I'd seen them present at a couple of conferences, and I was kind of like, well, this company's really got it going on. This is a great piece of technology. It was a technology that could turn off a computer using the pay, it would know when lightning was striking nearby, and it would go in and turn off the electronics based off of a paging network system, the old paging network system. So it could, you know, so it was great. So protecting, you know, the technology and the stuff from lightning surges and that kind of stuff. So it was a great little piece of innovation in that area. The problem is that their target market they were trying to sell it to was the power companies. And the power companies could care less whether you lost your computer or not, right? It didn't hurt them. The people that it hurt were the people that had the computer or had the servers or whatever, right? And so it was funny because, you know, that was where I had to start stepping back and sort of think about businesses, because I knew their technology was great, but I couldn't understand why they weren't getting any investment capital. And I talked to one of the investors that had looked at it, and I said, well, what was it that you didn't like about it? And he said, well, they don't really understand their marketplace. They don't understand who has the point of pain and who's going to want to buy it. And so they're targeting the wrong market, and they're never going to make any money. And so these guys had spent a lot of money chasing after dollars, and none of it with me, but they had spent a lot of money, and it was painful to see all the money that they had spent. And nobody had told – that's one of the reasons why I bent my business model the way I did. I said, I'd rather you spend $5,000 fixing your model, figuring out who's going to – you know, with somebody else, right, or whoever, fixing your model, figuring out who's going to buy it, how you can put money in the register, than just, you know, throw it in down a toilet chasing after investors because nobody's going to invest because your model's broken. And they went in and they got into an incubator, and incubator helped them, and they changed their model, and they joint ventured and private labeled it with surge protectors and these kind of folks, and now they've got a good business. But it took them, you know, it was painful. And so the build it and they will come scenario, we see this. And you probably have seen it too, right? You got to know how you're going to go sell it to a customer and who wants to buy it and who's going to give you money for it, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like for this, I think a key for a lot of these problems is to just get lots of feedback. So like for anyone with all ideas, no implementation, like you need to get feedback from people on like what your literal next step is. For this most recent problem that you described, like not understanding your market and whatnot, the key is just to talk to your customers and to figure it out. It's not very hard. It's not rocket science.
So planning, the number six is planning and budgeting. We call this ready, fire, aim, right? They underestimate what it will take to be successful. How much money is it going to take to get the cash flow? How much money is it going to do anything? Because they really haven't planned properly, and they're not budgeting time and money to do what they need to do. So they get that halfway there and can't complete it I'm amazed sometimes when people come to me and how much money they've spent, and I'm like, what did you spend it on? Well, they went out and they paid for a big branding thing first instead of getting, you know, something that was really critical to their business done, right? So ready, fire, aim. Do you see this very often?
Reasonably so. Of the people I talk to in the Bay Area, fortunately, most of them are very, very frugal. In terms of budgeting, very few of us budget when we're first starting up. You don't have to spend that much money on anything, really. It's almost obvious in Silicon Valley that your primary focus when you're first starting up should be the product. Like, Super Bowl ads before launching is something of the past. So, but yeah, I mean, fortunately, I'm not seeing as much of this anymore. Maybe back in the late 90s, this was a problem before the dot-com crash. I was too young to know.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, well, I'm part of a large organization, a conference called CEO Space that I go to, where one of the big things, it's a big chunk of its education. We used to do it in L.A., and now they're doing it in Reno, I think. But it's a big chunk of it is education on building businesses and then raising capital and all that kind of stuff. And that's a big thing that they hammer away at. And it's so funny seeing, well, it's sad funny, okay, we're seeing the companies that have come through and they've got all this stuff done, and then they realize the reason why they haven't been able to succeed is because they had the cart before the horse, right? And then so then they, fortunately, they do finally get the information and they learn and they get things on track right. They call it sequencing out there. And so it's great because that is, it's a big part of it. I know, you know, not knowing what I didn't know back in, you know, 5 years ago, 6, 7 years ago when I first really officially became an entrepreneur, you know, I, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, and there's a whole bunch of things I would do differently had I, you know, known what I know now, right? So one thing is part of that, and we're going to get into sort of some of the solutions on this in a minute, but it is, you know, planning and budgeting. You know, there is a reason why people write a business plan, and it is the blueprint on how you're going to get to that next level on each stage of the business. So, yeah, all right, number 7 is building teams and being a leader. We had some feedback from folks that did in this about, you know, it's all different stages. It's building the teams that's part of your board of advisors or just informal advisors. And then once you start to build the business, it's being a leader. But even businesses that seem like they're successful can fail because the leader is an autocrat, or they've got a lot of infighting going on within the organization that you may not see on the outside, but ultimately it's like a cancer within it. So in the businesses you've dealt with, in whether it's part of it, it's two steps. It's the getting started by building your teams, but then also, you know, making sure that you're a good leader going forward. What's been your experience in that area?
So in my experience, putting together an incredible, brilliant team of people is the number one cause of moderate success. If you have a bad team from the onset, yet you have the smallest plan, you have lots of money, you have great board of advisors, great mentors, that's great, but if your team sucks, then your company's going down the drain, and I've seen that from a few of my startups, but lately, like, for example, right now, I'm working with this guy named Andy, and he's also a classmate of mine at Berkeley, and he's possibly one of the most brilliant people I've ever met, and I don't know what I'd do without a co-founder as smart as him, so
that's great.
It's pretty important.
Yeah, one of my coaches asked me the question, are the people that are the people that are on your team, are they smarter than you? You know, are they better than you? Know? That's a really good question, because there's lots and lots of great examples as of leaders that have a vision and really kind of know where they're going, how they're able to attract people that are better than them in certain areas to form that best team. And so never discount your capability of attracting good people if you have a good vision and you're not afraid to share it with people and ask for their help. You know, I think that's a big part of it, is that folks sometimes they discount because they're not far enough. They're half, you know, kind of like your friend, they're half baked in that they're not all the way there. So they feel like they can't really attract the right people, or they don't have the money to attract the right people. And there's a lot, many, many, many great startups succeeded because they got the emotional buy-in of people that were really high quality folks to help them build that, and they accepted that help. And so that's a part of it. And if you're having trouble with that, then you need to, you know, any entrepreneurs out there listening, then you need to go get a coach. They'll teach you how to be more attractive to the right folks.
Yeah.
All right, number eight, beginning a company out of necessity, not passion. This was one that came in from the LinkedIn folks, and we see that right now. Here we are, you know, sort of in this economic situation, and there's always, and I've given my, you know, years of experience, I've seen this so many times when IBM laid off hundreds of thousands of people. Everybody went out there and started some kind of business, right? And so starting out of necessity rather than passion, you know, a passion means you see a problem in the marketplace, you see an opportunity in the marketplace, and you go and you build your solution for it and a team in order to execute on it. And there's a passion there, and you're willing to, you know, work those, burn that midnight oil and do all that stuff in order to make it successful, versus doing it out of necessity. And necessity is just like the worst kind of job, because you're having to work a lot, many, many, many more hours than you did in your regular job and get paid a whole lot less. And that's no fun if it's not a passion there. So do you see any of that? I mean, Silicon Valley is probably the heartbeat, the fertile ground for passionate entrepreneurs. So do you, but you may not encounter that much out there, but in your seminars or in your travels, you may have encountered folks doing it because of that, out of necessity.
Yeah. So fortunately, in Silicon Valley, you don't have too many of these people. Like, I know a lot of people, including myself, who, if you think of an idea that we're not that passionate about, yet it seems like a good idea, it's just better not to do it at all.
Right.
Because otherwise, you could find yourself in that my type 3 amateur entrepreneur type, where you have lots of implementations, but no focus, and such people are stuck in that category more often. To get out of this, it's pretty easy. You just need to self-discipline yourself such that if you're not going to be fully passionate about the idea, don't do it. But I guess a lot of people, if you have to do it, then I'm not really sure what to say if these so-called entrepreneurs say they have no other option.
Well, it's a different kind of, then you're a lifestyle entrepreneur. It's a different kind of entrepreneur, right? I mean, if you got to do it out of necessity because you can't get you got to make money, okay? Well, you know, do something that you enjoy doing to make money and get by, that you can do and make some decent money in a 9-to-5 kind of thing. Just don't illude yourself that you're going to build a huge multi-million dollar business on something that you're not passionate about.
Yeah, it's a bit difficult.
Okay, so number nine, not willing to hire the proper expertise. This is where folks, this is sort of like what's that saying, penny wise and a pound foolish? Is that how it goes? Penny wise and a pound foolish.
I have no idea.
That's a little bit. I think that was Benjamin Franklin said that. Anyway, okay, basically what this says is that when it comes time to do all the things you need to do when you're starting your business up, whether it's hiring somebody to, you know, finesse your business plan or help you with investor relations, teach you about that, get you some education, hiring the right lawyer. You don't need to go hire a $20,000 lawyer to do your private placement memorandum, but you do need legal expertise, right? So it's people that are buying, that need the expertise, not willing to pay for it, or if they do pay for it, not paying attention to it.
Yeah, I mean, well, I hear this a lot from my consultant friends, that companies hire them and pay big bucks to get advice, and very rarely do they actually follow through with any, which is kind of ironic. Like, if you're paying for the advice, you might as well, like, actually listen to it, and most of them don't. But personally, my much preferred route, instead of paying consultants, is to get mentors, or if you put together a board of advisors, to have them give you continuous feedback. So it's not just one meeting where you just get all their advice in one shot, but you go over ideas, you review them week after week to see how well they're going, and I think that's really important. So, yeah.
that goes to the that goes to the whole being able to be a visionary leader and attract the right people and then listening to them. We see that. I see that. Unfortunately, it pains me because, you know, people pay us for teaching them how to talk, you know, because raising capital is a learned art. It's not something that comes natural to people. And so you can, you know, flounder around for a while trying to do it, or else you can just kind of like when you go to do public speaking. You know, if you're not a good public speaker, then, you know, we tell people, if you're not a good public speaker, go take a Toastmasters class. Or if you want to, if you got the money, then you can hire somebody that's going to teach you how to be a good public speaker. Because if you're going to build a company that someday is public, you know, you're going to have to speak. And so you need to, you know, be good at that. And it's part of, you know, doing on the investor side as well. So we help people craft their messaging so that it's what an investor wants to hear. So every time before an event, I spend so much time going through people's presentations and talking to them about what they need to say and not say. Don't say that. Don't do this. And they'll get up there, and it just kills me because they'll say exactly what I told them not to say. I said, and then they wonder why they don't get the response that they want. And I'm thinking, I'm sitting here like, why do we spend those hours going through that if you're not going to listen to me? And it happens. And also, a bunch of people do listen, fortunately. But, you know, sometimes they'll get up there and they're just because it's what they're comfortable with. You know, they've done something a certain way for a while and that's just what they're comfortable with. And they don't – until they bang their head against the wall for a little bit and then they realize, oh, well, maybe she was right. And it's so funny because then people will come back and, you know, 3 months later they'll say, oh, I paid to go to this workshop on how to do a presentation. And they said this, this, and this. And I said, remember that conversation we had 3 months ago?
Oh,
it's good to hear it from somebody else and you finally listen. I'm really glad now you can be successful at that. So, okay, last one is number 10, and I'm sure we got a couple of people on the line that have been waiting patiently. We're going to open it up here, but number 10 is not knowing what the cost of money is. This is one that I see a lot of times where folks, you know, when it comes to building your business, it takes cash. And the number one best way to build your business and be able to fuel the growth is through customer revenue, right? That's the number one way. If you can get into the market and start generating some revenue, then that, I mean, that's the best, absolute best way, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And then the second, but the other ones that, you know, it costs some money, obviously, to generate customer revenue too, but you know, folks, it's so funny when people come to us and they're looking for, they always start out with looking venture capital, and because they don't really understand, they just know that term. And so we try to talk to them sometimes if they've got a contract or you're buying equipment or you're buying inventory, you really need to try to figure out a way to do that with a loan because a loan is a lot less expensive than equity. And they don't, a lot of times they don't understand that. You know, I don't care if you pay 20% on your loan money, it's still less than what it costs you with equity where you're selling a share for 50 cents and someday it's going to be $5 a share. They think of equity money as sort of, you know, sugar daddy money or something, you know. And so, you know, I think one of the things that they don't understand the cost of money and what is the right type of money based on the different stages and what it is that you need to do with it. And under there's lots of great information, free information out there in the marketplace that you can – entrepreneurs can use to go get more information about what the cost of money is. But even when it comes to liquidity, the MIT Forum did an excellent broadcast on this about the cost of going public, right? Whether you're doing, and even when you're getting ready to sell your business, I mean, there's a cost associated with every form of, you know, generating of capital to build your business. And I think folks really don't, a lot of times don't really understand the differences in that. You know, I'm not sure how much you encounter that in your particular case, but I guess really in Silicon Valley, the difference between the cost of an angel investor and the cost of a VC and the cost of, you know, all these other types of things. So, anyway, do you see much of that right now?
Quite a bit. So, I mean, first of all, personally, I have no experience with attracting angel investment money, venture capital money, or getting a loan. But from what I So out in the Bay Area, most companies start off with sending lots of angel money. And then when they grow up, they get VC money. But almost never do they get a loan. And it's all about liability. It's about risk. And it just makes sense to go for the angel route for most companies starting out. But going back to the original topic, not knowing the value of money, this can mean a lot of things, like not knowing what to spend money on and what, like not knowing what not to spend money on.
Right.
And it's tough because it's like you could either spend money or, well, let's say you could either do something yourself or you could spend just a little money to have someone else do it just as well, if not better than you. Yet the company says, oh, we need to save money, so we're not going to spend that. Yet it's really spending money to make more money or to have more time to actually worry about what counts.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's the time value of money as well, right? Because how much is your time worth, or how much do you lose in the time it takes to get your product to market because you're trying to not spend money? That kind of goes back to number 9, not willing to hire the proper expertise. You know, I could, when it comes to like doing web stuff or doing some of the stuff that you know, I'm not an expertise on, like it took me forever to finally get my blogs up. But I hired somebody to get my blogs up, so all I got to do is type and do them now, right? And to get, you know, do this stuff because I never had the time, and I didn't really know how to do it. I didn't want to know, you know, how do I do it and do it right and put the little widgets in and all that kind of stuff. So I hired somebody, you know, it was $750 or something to get it initially up. But now my business is significantly better off because I went and took the time to get 2 blogs and this podcast and these various things up and running so that all I had to do was use my knowledge and creative talent of typing, you know what I mean? And I didn't have to do the other stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, that is a great point on that because I think they do sometimes understand, and we did a segment, and we do it at our spec conference, on bootstrapping. And that's one of the best ways to create value in your company is to figure out how to use tiny, tiny, tiny bits of money, you know, relatively speaking, your burn rate, to get a lot accomplished. And what are ways that you can bootstrap so that you don't spend big bucks, you spend the bucks on the right things that you need to spend them on. You know, it's kind of like you don't need an office. You can, you know, have a virtual office if you have to have something like that, lots of virtual assistants. It's using the internet in so many different ways to save money, you know, versus the traditional ways that we might have done it, right? So,
yeah.
You know, lots of great examples of that. So I'm going to sort of kind of had a sort of a wrap-up of what the solutions are, and then we're going to open up the phone lines here. So if anybody wants to call in, it's 347-945-6873. So my solutions, I have 3 solutions, and you may really think of this as, you may have some other ones, but the 3 solutions I came up with that really helps, that really moves a company from being an entrepreneur, from being an amateur to an expert or to a professional, successful entrepreneur, CEO. Number 1 is proper planning, knowing the stages and the actions that are needed and anticipating and, you know, doing the proper research. So proper planning is number 1. Number 2 is team building, drawing from the other's expertise to cover what you don't know and having it as a sound way to accomplish what you need to accomplish. And 3rd thing is focus and consistency. And this is sort of, it kind of ties in with the others. So it's planning, so you have a course of action that you're going to take, staying consistent with that and letting your team help you be consistent with your course of action.
Yeah, I like the solutions, especially like number 2, hiring a good team. Because if you hire a good team with the qualities that you and I described today, then you're just surrounding yourself by awesome people who are going to make sure that you actually follow through with all this advice. It's like if you don't hire a good team, then everything else good that you do just will not matter.
Yeah, so great. Okay, well, and do you have to? I know we originally had set this up from 12 to 1. I've actually got it reserved for to carry over longer than that because I thought it might carry over. Do you have to leave at 1 o'clock, Jessica?
I do not. I'll make time for calls.
Okay, terrific. Okay, good. So now we're going to open it up. Again, this is Karen Rands, on Spec Talk Radio, and I have Jessica Ma. JessicaMa.com is our featured guest. We've been talking about the 10 ways that entrepreneurs show that they're amateurs and 3 solutions for overcoming that. And we're going to open up the phone lines. And how we do this is I announce your last 4 digits, and I'll say hello, and then you tell us your name and what your business is. And if you've got some input to this, then we'll do that, and then we'll move on to the next one and have a little say. I've got right now, I've got 4 lines here. They're ready to come in. So first one is 5155. 5155, welcome. You're on the air. Hello? I took you by surprise. You got your phone muted. Hello? Okay, we're going to move on to the next one. You might have just been listening, and I'm going to leave your mic open. So if you realize that you wanted to talk, 5155, you can call in. It's 859 area code. Okay, so the next one is 5014. I think I recognize this number. Hello, welcome. You're on the air. Area code 561-5014. All right, everybody's they got their own phones muted or they went to sleep. Okay. Next one is area code 404, last 4 digits 9193.
Yes, Karen, I love this show. Always nice to listen to the show and see what's going on here. I'm really learning a lot from this show.
Ten okay,
ideas.
Is this Ken?
Yes,
you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, this is Ken, the Passion Entrepreneur Sales and Profit Evangelist, and I would like to add – thank you, Jessica, for being on the program. Thank you, Karen, for hosting the show. I want to add maybe 1 or 2,
okay.
And one that you hadn't thought about, but you know Karen, I always talk about it, and that's becoming a sales expert. If you can't sell your idea, you can't sell your product, your service, you can be the best professional expert, have the best equipment, but if you can't sell it, you can't sell it to anybody, then guess what? You don't have a business. So you've got not only be an expert in what you do, but be an expert at sales.
Right.
Yeah, right. That's
yeah. The next one is being profitable. I always say that if you can't run your business profitably, then you won't be in business for very long. So that's critical. And so you can add that one to the, I know maybe that's a item 11. And then the last one is you got to know your talents and you got to know your strengths. If you know what you're good at, stay within that frame. Stay in your lane. I know for a fact I love to learn. I love to coach. I love to teach. And so I want to stay within that because that's what gives me my passion. You guys talked about passion. So I just want to say keep up the good work, Karen. Thank you, Jessica, for sharing your expertise and knowledge. And I'm really learning a lot from this. I'm taking notes, and I'm going to put this on someplace so I can always refer back to it. So thank you.
Okay. It'll be up on my blog, I'm sure, right, Ken?
Yes.
Yes, thanks. Okay, good. Thank you for calling in and adding that. That's Ken Brown, passionate entrepreneur. Any of those other folks that we had open up the phone lines want to contribute anything? All right. The next one is 0176. 0176, you're on the air.
Hello, Karen.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Hey, Karen. Hello. Good afternoon. And hi, Jessica.
Hi, how are you?
Good, Jessica. I responded. I'm the guy who responded to your blog post.
Yes.
Yeah, and I have a great question, which is you definitely are a very strong, talented entrepreneur, but you're also in with the wolves out there out in California with the early stage equity environment, angel investors, early stage VCs, and I'm curious why you haven't gone that route to get any support yet. Or have you tried and you haven't just gotten to that point where you've been successful and so forth, like to give us a little bit of an understanding and an appreciation why you're not like another Mark Zuckerberg who, you know, goes down the block and picks up $15 million to take out the idea to the next level?
Well, yeah. So I get asked this a lot. It's like, how much money did you get? And it's almost like a race who could attract the most investment money. And from my personal experience, I just haven't had to spend that much money. I have a lot saved up from the last few companies I worked on. And trying internet companies these days is really cheap, especially if you know that program, how to design, how to run the server. So my costs are really paying for my service fees, my bandwidth, and that's about it. So until I have to hire people full-time, I don't see myself needing to attract any capital.
Have you been going to the events to start, like, educating yourself so when you hit that level, you're adequately prepared to ask and obtain money?
Yeah, so, I'm in this problem where I don't know all that I don't know because I haven't had experience of actually signing a term sheet or whatnot. I have a lot of personal friends, pretty good friends, who are full-time angel investors, and many of them have offered the time to work with me to brainstorm my ideas, and when I do need the capital, I know I could turn to them, but I'm not exactly sure what to ask for and how to go about doing that yet.
Whenever you get that point, please post to let us know. I think you'll do well out there. It'll be interesting just to see how it pans out for you when you enter that stage.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, thanks. And Brian, you want to tell folks a little? You want to introduce Brian Javelin, Service Exchange? Do you want to give your website or say
sure.
What you do?
Sure. My name is Brian Javelin of My Online Toolbox. We're a Dell Top 10 innovator for contractors, specifically in the home repair and remodeling space. We have over 130 million homes in America now that are between 28 and 32 years of age, which is a prime target of customers that will look to, at a minimum, repair things that are broken down and at a maximum start fixing up things because their houses are slowly becoming older and there's nowhere to move at this point. The market has been so brought down to its knees that most people are not relocating or not upsizing. They're actually downsizing. New construction's dead, and while the existing home market is so saturated with a percentage of homes that are somewhat one step away from the foreclosure bankruptcy process that it puts my customer base, which is the contractor, right at my front door. The collaboration solution connects contractors to homeowners and suppliers. It's called myonlinetoolbox.com, and we welcome people to try out the solution for free.
Yep, and I can say that I know – Brian, from your own experience, because this is your second or your third project. So did you, when you were listening in on some of our amateur characteristics, did you encounter some of those when you were first getting started years ago?
Oh, of course. Yeah, every single one of them. And it's half of it is stuff you could prepare for, and the other half is experience that even though you could read the book until it happened, it's kind of like I said before, hindsight, 20/20. And there's just so many things that, you go in the right direction and you really, if I did not have the, perseverance and determination to continue, there's just so many obstacles that sometimes your own education process could become very negative and you could get a feeling of it being brought down, bringing you down. But the smart play is to think of it more along the line as kind of like going to college to get smarter. They're just handing you the book. The teacher's just reading to you, and hopefully you're absorbing it. But until you fall down enough to learn what you don't, shouldn't be doing or you should do better or different, it's really an education process. And some people do it well in their, teens and early 20s. Others it takes to 40 to 50, but it's still an evolution. And I really think that everything that was said was applicable, and all I would do is be underscoring what was said without adding anything new to it.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you for calling in and sharing.
Okay, and good Thanks. Luck, Jessica. Look forward to seeing you at a forum one day.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too.
One of the things that you, when you commented back on Brian's initial question, is that you're in a terrific situation because you are building your business the way you are to not necessarily need the money and realizing you're not just taking it because somebody's ready to open up a checkbook because you get into a whole other host of situations. You create value in your company, and until you need that, and because you've surrounded yourself with a great team of advisors, you're going to end up having some folks that will care enough to be on the same side of the table with you when it comes time to structure that and help you put that together, right? And that's a key part of it. One of the companies that presented at our last event is a liquor company. They're incredibly how successful they've become very rapidly in delivering out into the market a new absinthe and a new gin. And it was interesting when I asked him how he got his first money, he had found an investor that he basically sold the vision to, and that investor helped him structure his offering, put the money in, helped him structure the offering the way he would like it, and then helped him go out and raise the money. You know, he didn't do it for a fee. He did it because he believed in the company and helped him structure the offering. And I'd never seen an offering actually quite like this. And it was really very interesting because it sort of, it manages to the milestones the company is going to create and the value they're going to create, because by committing a small amount of money now at a lower valuation, the investors are almost pre-committing to the next round as the valuation goes up. But they may not, in theory, they're not going to have to go out and raise more money because everybody kind of knew it along the way, but they're not obligated to invest more until the company has actually done the milestone. So it was a very clever way, and it was because of a relationship he had built up with a specific investor that helped him put that together. So you're in a terrific spot, Jessica, that you're going to be able to probably do a similar thing when it's the right time, because you're going to have some cheerleaders there that want to help you succeed and structure it properly.
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited for when that time comes.
Okay, so we have, again, anybody that wants to call in and contribute to our 10, to any of the ways to identify being an amateur and to overcome being an amateur, please do so at 347-945-6873. And we do still have that one caller, a few people dropped off at 5014. If you want to make a comment, feel free to do that and just chime in. Otherwise, we'll start to wrap up here. So thank you so very much, Jessica, for being on the show with us today. And I'm really excited to be connected with you in cyber world and following all the great progress that you're going to make and all your insights and various things. And hopefully someday we will actually get to meet face-to-face. And anything, any pearls of wisdom that you would like to put out there, anything that you are working on that you'd like to promote to our audience and the folks that will hear this after the broadcast?
Sure. Right now, I'm working on this really cool project called internshipsin.com, and it's a site to help students find high-quality internships. So we're looking for companies who need cheap, smart talent to come on our site, and same with students. Students are looking for awesome internship opportunities. They should definitely try out internshipsin.com.
So it's internship. What was the last part?
Internship,
N-I-N. Okay. So it's internship, internshipin.com.
Correct.
Okay. Great. So that's terrific that you're offering that. And is it something that's primarily a West Coast thing, or is it something that, you know, companies that are looking for skilled interns and interns that are looking for great opportunities from all over the place, or how does it work?
I could go into business strategy a little, but we wanted to focus on the West Coast at first, but then we noticed a lot of people were looking for internships and offering internships out in New York and Boston. So, I mean, already it started to spread out. But like I said before, I think focus is a really important thing. So we're only focusing our marketing efforts on the Bay Area and the SoCal area.
Okay, so most of the opportunities and most of the interns right now are that place. So you'll gain momentum over time, and it'll be something that folks over time. That's a great niche that you're serving in the marketplace. So any folks that are, I think it's worthy for people to wherever they are to go and look at it and be familiar with it. And there may be, you never know, you might have a sponsor that wants to sponsor it within a certain community for the businesses and the interns, potential interns, the college students in that particular area, and maybe through sponsoring can help you get a different geography set up.
Yeah.
Okay.
But other than that, I'd say for last words of wisdom, I think for me the absolute most important thing for getting over any of these traits of being an amateur entrepreneur is to just have an incredible team and to not skimp out on making sure that you have people who are smarter than you who are working with you to create an awesome product.
Absolutely. Yeah, a team is so very important in not selling yourself short on the ability to attract the right people. You know, it's the person that you went to college with, or the person that, you know, may be a great buddy, or the person that, you know through, you know, some social thing, may be, you know, a great person, but it may not be the best person for that job or the best person for that to be take it to that next level. And so it's really important to recognize that and take sort of the emotion out of the business side of things. There may still be a role for that person in the organization, but it may not be the strategic role. And we see that sometimes. That was that company that I first left IBM with. His buddy from college was his CFO, and the investors were like, neither one of you have ever built a big business and want to bring in management that can do that. You'll still get to be in the company. And he wouldn't hear it, you know. And so that's ultimately, if you have a passion for it, it goes back to that passion. If you have a passion for what it is you're accomplishing and the problem that you're solving in the marketplace, then you need to get out of the way of it delivering the value that it and the problem and deliver that innovation to the marketplace, because there's somebody out there that needs whatever it is that you're doing. And get the ego out of the way, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We've seen a few egos ruin businesses in the past. I'm sure you've experienced that yourself, seeing people's egos get in the way of their success.
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean, half of this is just psychological.
Yeah, so, okay, so great. We're going to wrap up here. Thank you so very much for being with us. This is Jessica Ma. Please tune into her blog at jessicamah.com, JessicaMah.com, and check out her newest initiative, which is internshipin.com. And we're sure we'll be hearing lots of good things from you. Already in Inc. magazine as a one to watch. We're gonna the 10 steps as a the 10 things just to wrap up here is number one, all ideas and no implementation. Number two, lots of ideas and half baked implementation. Number three, lots of ideas, lots of implementation, and absolutely no focus. Number four, lots of ideas, but doesn't know what you don't know and not willing to learn it. Number five, innovation with no practical knowledge of the market. Build it and they will come. Number six, planning and budgeting. Ready, fire, aim. Underestimating what it was going to take to actually get into the market and spending the money on the wrong things. Number seven, building teams and being a leader. Being a leader so that you inspire others to join your team and getting the best of the best that you can to execute on the vision. Number eight, beginning a company out of necessity and not passion, not having a passion for what it is that you do so you're willing to do that, persevere and succeed through all the troubling and the tough times. Number nine, not willing to hire the proper expertise for whatever it is in order to, you know, understanding the value of time and money and getting the expertise if you need to hire it, figuring out a way to do it affordably so that you can move the ball forward faster. Number 10, not knowing what the cost of money is. We said this was whether it's the revenue, you know, difference in the cost of money for launching your business, for growing your business, you know, growing it with the revenues. But also, you know, what is the cost of not doing something? What's the time value of that money by not taking the action that you need to take? Then we had some call-ins that added making sure that you're a sales expert, that you can sell it. Because if you can't sell it, then you're not going to be able to teach anybody else to sell it. Making sure that you've got a strategy, a place to get profitable. We see that right now happening with the conversations about Twitter and what's going on with it. So, know your talents and your strengths so you can put the other folks into place to complement what you have as part of your team. And then I actually didn't write down what Brian said. So And so those are some of the things that we came up with, a few other ones along the way, but those are the ones that have been highlighted. And the three things that you can do to move yourself from the amateur status into the successful entrepreneur status is: one, proper planning, knowing the stages and actions that you need to take. Number two, team building, drawing from others' experience to cover what you don't know and making sure you got the good team to execute. Focus and consistency, planning and teaming, helping all these other folks, helping folks do that. So that's the recap. Any final comments, Jessica?
No, just go out there, stop overthinking and start planning your next action steps and start your next company. If you're still contemplating, should I start it, should I not, should I start this and other projects at the same time, just pick one thing, stick to it, and go for it.
Okay, terrific. Yep. We have before us, as entrepreneurs, and then within the purpose of what Spec Talk Radio does with Southeast Private Equity Community, we have the opportunity to be economic architects, because it's through entrepreneurism and innovation and investors that believe in that, that invest in that, and invest in that innovation, getting to market and creating the jobs, that we really will have the turnaround that we're going to have. And so for all those listeners out there, I hope you take it to heart to do what you need to do to become professional entrepreneurs, to get your innovation into the marketplace, to be successful, to create those jobs, and have a whole new generation of economic growth. So thank you again, Jessica, for calling in and being a part of the show. Look forward to talking to you again very soon. And that's it. Have a great weekend. This is Spec Talk Radio. Thank you very much for tuning in. Next week we're going to have a great show on carbon tax credits. Is it the next wave of what's going to happen in the marketplace in the next big bubble? Is that going to be carbon tax credits? And what do those all mean? It's a buzzword, carbon tax credits. So we're going to have some experts on talking about that as part of the next wave for the next bubble, I guess. So thank you very much, everybody. This is Karen Rand, Spec Talk Radio, with guest Jessica Ma. And have a great weekend. Onward and upward. Thanks. We'll be right back.